So this is week two of our session, which is focused on time. There's a couple of things about this week's reading that I thought might be good to note at the outset. One is that the reading itself is mostly kind of discouraging, in the sense that it goes on quite a bit about how we're stuck with our usual understanding, and we can only tell stories, and we can. Somebody's creating sound here. Okay, somebody's been muted. Okay, we can only tell stories, and stories will never really let us understand the time that lets us tell stories. This is kind of the overview of the chapter. And so it's a little discouraging, but there is some material right at the beginning that I want to talk about that suggests the alternative, and then we do want to go into the story that Rinpoche tells in this chapter. And then the other thing that's related to that is, of course, we stop reading this chapter in the middle, and the last part of the chapter begins to explore a possibility for moving out of that. And we're not going to read that last part of the chapter. We're not reading it next week. And in fact, I looked through, and we're never going to read the second part of this chapter. What we're going to do instead is take a different approach. This opens up or establishes the difficulty, the problem, and it leaves us in the place which you sometimes find in Rinpoche's writing, where you say, well, it's hopeless, you know, there's nothing we can do. But of course, there's always the suspicion that that's not the final word. So Klaus says here in the chat box, he says he was so frustrated that he went ahead and read something from Knowledge of Time and Space, pages 312 to 317, which is the opposite. Yeah, it's never the whole story to say that we're stuck and everything is hopeless. But at the same time, you know, the reason that Rinpoche does that, it seems to me, is we have to be able to really experience that. We have to be able to understand that there isn't any easy way out, that that everything about the way we ordinarily engage our experience all points in the same direction. You know, we're always conducting the same story, to use the language that is in this reading for this week. And even our attempts to get out of that are just variations on the same theme. Michael adds to that, he says, discouragement is just a story. But alas, when it comes to visit, it can gag all the other more cheerful guests. Yeah, that's a very nice image. You imagine you're having a dinner party and one person starts to tell this very sad story and everybody gets depressed and then they all go home. there's some risk of that. And I wanted to call attention to it because if you felt that way, as Klaus did, don't let that be the final word, but don't bounce off it. You know, don't put up a defense, which we also sometimes do. So let's start with something more positive. At the very beginning of the reading for today, it actually points back, and I mentioned this in the orientation. So the very first sentence says, or it's a question, says, does turning to know time inwardly mean knowing time directly? And then it says no, because we can't know time directly. And that's kind of the launching place for the whole chapter and exploring the ways in which we're limited and restricted, exactly because we don't know time directly. We think we do. We think we have an idea of what time is, but we don't. So that's the source of our difficulty, you could say. But the very first sentence refers to this idea that we could know time inwardly. And it doesn't tell us what that means here, but as I mentioned in the orientation, the previous chapter, the end of the previous chapter, introduces this idea that that we could turn inward. The place that's introduced is on page 112. So it's talking about how our usual temporality is rooted in the sense that we're going from one place to another place, or from the past to the future. That's really at the heart of what we know about time, or our usual understanding of time. And that leads to the kind of stuckness that we're going to be exploring in a little bit. But here it says, we don't know how to go, we don't know how to proceed, we're kind of stuck in that situation. And then he says, within this not knowing, we have a choice. Why, this is on page 112, why feel compelled to go anywhere at all? Within the present immediate arising, we are free to turn inward. And then he gives us a kind of an example that we could turn inward to understand the dynamic of time. And that's why the question is asked at the beginning of the reading, at the beginning of chapter 13. Well, can we understand the dynamic of time when we understand it, or when we explore it? Are we really contacting time directly, or are we knowing time directly? And then he goes on and says, well, hard to see how that could be. He doesn't say no. He just says, given our usual understanding, it's hard to see how that could be. But the possibility is there at the outset, that there is a different kind of knowing available to us. So I want to take a minute to go into that a little bit. As he says, it's a knowing that doesn't involve a going. The reading, the exercise actually for this coming week is one that many of you know. If you have some experience with TSK, we do it on retreats very often, and that's an exercise called going without going. And this is very similar to that. This possibility of turning inward. You could think of it as a knowing, a knowing without going, right? It's a knowing that doesn't go outside or doesn't go anywhere else. Sudhi comments on a sentence in these few pages before what was assigned that she says she found very profound. It says, the witness becomes a summary term for a sequence of temporal events. It just says witness, okay. I don't know if I want to go too much into the notion of the witness. It's come up in previous sessions, and it's come up in this session, but the idea is that our usual way of knowing is tied into a sense that there is a someone who knows, and that someone must be a witness. So that's a part of the story. It's a very fundamental part of the story. And I think I said before that, not this week, but I've said in these first couple of weeks, that you could look at the focus of what we're doing now in terms of really questioning the structure of the self, or in terms of questioning the structure of the story, the temporal structure of the story, because the two are so intimately related. The stories that we tell, and actually the stories that we live or inhabit, are stories about the self, or stories in which the self is at the center. It may not be that we're always telling stories about the self, but each story presupposes that there's a self at the center. And at a very fundamental level, that self is the witness. And the passage that Sudhi points to is that you could think of the witness as a, as it says here, a summary term for a kind of a story, which presupposes a certain kind of temporality. Klaus says about that, a knowing without turning to the next story. Yeah, so this is the alternative. At least that's what I understand you to be saying, Klaus, and it's what I would say, is if we could turn inward, right? A knowing inward that doesn't go anywhere. That would be the alternative. We wouldn't just automatically keep the chain of stories going. There would be this possibility of a knowing without going. The going always has to do with the narrative. The knowing, the going always has to do with from and to and before and after and subject and object and all of these things that, that we've explored. And so these pages, right before actually the assigned reading, are pointing toward the possibility of an alternative. But the way that this chapter starts is by saying, it's hard to see how we can do that because we're so committed to the structure of the story. You know, so in this first paragraph on page 115, it says, if we look in terms of time's conventional operation, we can't know time because time is what presents everything that appears, and it does so in terms of a linear progression. Time is not one of the things that can show up in time. And so we seem to be stuck, and we want to explore that. So before we explore that, I thought it would be good to practice with this a little. So we're kind of going against the structure of this reading, which tells us again and again and in many different ways that we're just stuck in our ordinary understanding of time, even though it also begins to give us or suggest a way out. Because actually, let me say this, let me take a minute to say this, because I think it's important to understand what's going on here. If we look at page 116, Rinpoche is not, of course, in TSK, he really never says, this is the way things are, right? He asks us to explore and to consider. In this part of, in the opening of this chapter, he says, well, as long as we stay within ordinary time, there's nothing we can do. Time does not show up in time. So are we really just totally stuck? And of course we would expect, you know, in one sense you say, yes, we're totally stuck because that's where the story leads us. But in another sense, we're not committed to the story. And so, no, we're not totally stuck. And so he does talk about a different temporality, a more dynamic temporality that's right at the top of page 116. And then he says, we want to explore that. We want to test that possibility. And the way to do it is to tell a story. And the story that he's going to tell is a story in which we're stuck. So he's telling the story of how it is that we're stuck. And in this story, there's no way out. And that's really what the rest of the reading that we did for this week is about, telling this story. But it's just a story. So why tell the story? Well, because we want to understand the dynamic of our ordinary conventional knowledge. And by understanding that dynamic, we're going to evoke a different way of knowing. So the possibility of understanding the dynamic, the ordinary dynamic of time, is already, you could say, a kind of step outside that dynamic. So he's using the storytelling structure. That's what's kind of, that's the intention here, is to use the storytelling structure to evoke without yet really discovering or activating, you could say, a different, more dynamic temporality. But clearly that's where we're headed, is the more dynamic temporality, right? So there's a couple of comments here. So Michael asks, would the dynamic of time feel like an unfolding, a blossoming of a living presence? Well, yes. So now we could try to describe it in different ways. And unfolding is a very nice term because it suggests, you know, the kind of clue that Rinpoche has given us at this point is this notion that it's a knowing without going. We don't go anywhere else. So let's look for a moment, actually, at what that means. Last week we talked about these three different forms of knowledge that are available in our ordinary temporal structures. There's polar knowledge, there's descriptive knowledge, and there's intentional knowledge. And all three of those forms of knowing involve a going. They involve a leaving the immediacy, you could say, of experience to go somewhere else. So polar knowledge is about the present. So you'd say, well, okay, so we're in the present. But the idea of polar knowledge is that there's a subject that reaches out to know an object. So there has to be this journey, you know, from the subject pole to the object pole, and then from the object pole back. If you want to get any knowledge, you have to bring the knowledge back. So there's this little mini story in the present, you know, it's presupposed by the whole notion of polar knowledge. And then for descriptive and intentional knowledge, it's easier to see. Descriptive knowledge reaches back toward the past. It understands things in terms of describing them in the terms that have already been given. And intentional knowledge is the self sort of bringing to mind or remembering what its own goals are and its own intentions, and it just thrusts us toward the future. So our conventional knowledge is always temporal in an ordinary temporality, you could say a first level time structure. And we find ourselves always off center. This is something that Rinpoche says in other places, really. He doesn't use that terminology here. But we're always going somewhere. It's always a from-to statement. It's always a past, present, future kind of knowledge. And the alternative that he's presented now, right now, is a knowing inward in which there's no going. A knowing without going, as I've been saying. That's not his term, but I think it helps clarify, especially compared to the practice of going without going. So in this knowing without going, it's not that it's static, there's a dynamic. And so I come back now to Michael's question. He says, is it like an unfolding or a blossoming of a living presence? And I think that's a very nice image because, you know, the flower blossoms, but it doesn't go anywhere. It just unfolds the possibilities inherent within it. That's more like what we're headed towards. So John says, this is interesting, he's pointing us ahead a little bit. He says, I like the statement, the music is already playing. This is on page 118. Let's see if I can find it. He says, as the first note sounds, oh, it's already up at the top. Okay. So that's interesting. I think you're taking it in a direction that's a little different, John, from what is presented here, but I could be wrong. Let's explore it a little bit, because this is the version now, this is the understanding that is very much based on our ordinary conducting of time. Okay, so he says at the bottom of 117, the conductor's story pronounces us the conductors of what time presents. But it also proclaims that we're compelled into our roles. I mean, that's the choice we have. We can conduct time. Okay. And the range of what we conduct is sharply restricted. There's thoughts, there's emotions, there's memories, there's the senses, and we conduct accordingly. And then it says, the music is already playing. The themes present themselves. It's too late to choose silence, right? Or consider another way of conducting. So it's a little bit like this image just comes to mind. Of course, when we use the term conducting, it's natural to think, and I think this is the image of a conductor of an orchestra, right? And this is almost like a nightmare, right? Where, you know, the kinds of nightmares you have where you realize that there was some test, you know, you've been taking some course and now you have to go take the test, but in fact you never even knew you were taking the course, and you haven't studied for it and you haven't prepared for it. Maybe you have to have spent many years in school like me to have that nightmare, but I know that other people have that also. It's kind of like that. You find yourself conducting a piece of music and you don't know how you got there, you know, and you don't know what the music is, and you're up there and everybody's waiting for you to do it just right. We're thrust into this role of the conductor. So the image of the conductor and the notion of the music already playing is another way of saying it's too late for us to choose. We're stuck in that. And John was is started to comment on that, but in the meantime, Sudhi did. So, okay, let's finish with that. Okay, so John says, yeah, it exposes the futility of fighting the story. Right, the music is already playing. And it creates in me a sense of release to expand into a larger space, or maybe time, too, to dance with it. So yeah, and that's why, I mean, that's why I thought you had pointed toward this image of the music already playing. In one way, if you get away from the nightmare aspect, like it's too late, you're already in this position and there's nothing you can do about it, the image of conducting a piece of music and you know, the beauty of the music, that suggests maybe there's something very positive, very, you know, the possibility, if you could turn inward and appreciate it, it would be something like what Michael said, where you know, the flower is already blossoming without going anywhere. The music is there, and if you could just relax into the beauty of the music, that would be another possibility. So rather than fighting it, so what you say, thank you for clarifying, you know, you could release and you could expand into the space, and then you say time to dance with it, and that of course is where this whole discussion in dynamics is ultimately heading. Ultimately is too strong a word, but it moves toward the image of dancing with time. So that's going in exactly the right direction. Let's go back and look for a moment at what Sudhi says. Sudhi makes a comparison between this music already playing. Let's see. Yes, it's the same as he says on page 114. The witness, so I think this is all a quote, the witness is free to continue with its testimony. Each claim it makes expresses a knowledge that does not depend on the witness in any way. Seen as claims without regard to their content, the proclamations of the witness are manifestations of knowledge. They do not need to be rejected, for they stand revealed with a new lightness as richly creative and wholly lucent expressions of a timing inseparable from knowledgeability. Yeah, that's very nice. And that is exactly the place where Rinpoche, you know, you could say there are these times in the text and in various TSK books, there are these times when I notice I'm kind of stuck. Is that still the case? Can you all hear me? Hello? Okay. Okay, so I don't know why my face is stuck. Okay. I guess I could try logging off the video and logging back onto it. Let me try that. Where was I? So there's always the possibility within the moment of, okay, now I seem to be live again, really not turning away from the conducting, but letting it be the expression of this inward knowledgeability. So, you know, it's very good to keep that in mind. And that actually is where I wanted to go with the practice. And it's a very simple practice. And that is, if you just take your present experience, and you could say in this present experience, as in every present moment, we are conducting time. We are conducting a particular story or a particular piece of music, and the witness is inherent in that. As both John and Sudhi were saying, the point is not to try to fight that. But instead of doing that, we have this other possibility that's been presented to us, which is that we can know without going elsewhere, not like polar knowledge, not like intentional knowledge, not like descriptive knowledge. There is a certain immediacy of knowing that's going on in the moment. And it's not a knowing this or a that. It's not a knowing a from or a to. It's not an explanation. It's not an account. It's none of those things. There's just an immediacy of knowing. And the passage that Sudhi put up is very lovely. So I'll go back to it again. There is a whatever appears is revealed with a new lightness, richly creative, wholly lucent expression of a timing inseparable from knowledgeability. So that is a description, but let's also let it be the practice for a few minutes now. So the question to ask is, what is the knowing that's available without reaching out to know something? A kind of an inner knowing. You might think of it in terms of the kind of experience you have sometimes in kumye or yoga, where you know from within. So it's a knowing within that doesn't go anywhere, doesn't depend on the structures that are conducted into place. So our question really, our practice is, let's see what do we find when we look for that? So let's take a couple of minutes and see what comes up when we look for that inward knowing. Okay, so I'll give you all an opportunity to comment on what you may have noticed there. I'm going to make one comment, and then John has raised a question here, and I'm going to look at that. So my comment is to suggest that it's interesting to relate this back to what we were doing in the last session when we talked about space, and especially the notion of the feel of the field. And one of the distinctions that I really tried to emphasize there was that to engage the feel of the field means to turn away from the content of what's shows up. The whatever shows up, there's always the feel of the field. And what we're talking about here is in a way similar. It's whatever the content of the story, it's fine. The conductor conducts the story. The witness steps forward to bear witness to the reality. That's the content. But within that, there's an inner knowing. Okay. Yeah, I think awareness is a term that Rinpoche uses sometimes in the TSK books, and sometimes he talks about knowingness or knowledgeability. The quote that Sudhi had earlier was knowledgeability. Yeah, I think there are many ways in which he tries to point toward, as you say, the dawning of an alternative. And dawning is another nice image if you think about ways in which you could suggest a knowing without going. You know, you don't go out to get knowledge. So dawn is very much like that. It's like if you've ever watched, well, I mean, if you've ever been awake at dawn, but I'm thinking right now of a movie, a video where, you know, everything is dark and then the sun rises and light dawns and nothing moves, nothing changes. But everything is transformed. And I think that dawning of awareness is very, very much what we're talking about. Okay, John's comment was not really a comment. He just thought that the video had gotten stuck. That is, that the whole program, he didn't realize we had stopped to do some practice. Okay. Klaus asks, might time be the happening of knowing space? Well, that's very much related to what I was pointing toward the connection between the feel of the field and what should we call it? The dynamic of time's presenting, which is really what we were more at after here, what Hayward just called the dawning of awareness. So yeah, I think there's a very strong connection. I really do. So Eliana says, when I look for something, there is a focus and many details are lost. But if I stay mindful and aware, I can have a more open perspective, a richer experience. Right. The richness is already, it seems like, an entry point, isn't it? It's just the awareness that experience doesn't have to be limited to this or that and all the things that come with identity, all the things that come with a story that is set up or with a conducting that has already been set in place. So richness is another fine word. Sometimes, actually, it says in the reading here somewhere, I can't quite remember. I think it's in the, see if I can find it. I think it's in the section before, here it is. It was on page 112, so it's not actually in the reading. It's this material that I kind of, it's the pre-reading. It says, in the immediacy of presence, a single thought, a single connection, a single unexpected phrase or turn of inquiry may reveal a new knowledge and a different timing. So I think sometimes when people make comments here in the chat box or in conversation, I'm always interested in, you know, in the turn of phrase, the something that just points us in a little bit different direction. And sometimes they can be very simple words. So the word you use here, Eliana, is just richer, a richer experience. But if you really think, what's involved in that? Why is it richer? I think that already tells us something. Or the dawning of awareness, or the blossoming of experience. Those are the kinds of things we look for, and they're little pointers, you could say, toward a timing that isn't our usual timing. We could also say a knowing that isn't our usual knowing, or an appearance that isn't bound to space in the usual ways. Well, right now we're focused on time. So Sudhi is reporting on her experience in those few moments, those few minutes when we practiced. She says, only in this few minutes, so much caring, so sensitive to everything and anything. So much love and compassion for all the errors for me and others. And that's very nice that you bring that in. When we're not so caught up in the story that's being conducted, then I think there's a lot of room for forgiveness. We may have talked about forgiveness in the last session. I've been thinking about it some in the last few weeks or months, and the thing about forgiveness, it's a starting over. And so very much at the heart of the kind of timing that we're investigating now, there's a starting over. In each moment, there's a starting over. And we've looked at that in the past when we've looked at time, this immediate arising of something that's completely new. And that manifests, I use the word forgiveness, you didn't, Sudhi, but you say love and compassion for all the errors for me and others. I think that's very much the same thing. Okay, let's see. Bruce writes, in looking for the knowing from within, I found a kind of saturation of knowing in the looking, the luminosity of structuration, the same taste of subject and object in their arising. Well, that's nice. Which I always like what people say. You know, it seems to me that you engage the practice, and then there's always something, some kind of knowing that comes out of it. So when we conduct, there is the structure of what's conducted, and of course, temporality in past, present, future are the classic example of that. A good place to look at that perhaps is on page 118. This is a little below the top of the page we looked at because John was talking about the music. The music is already playing. But in the next paragraph, it says, prior to the emerging of specific themes, we've already conducted in ways that assure this outcome. So this outcome is the outcome of what we already know to be the case. We conduct the time of objects in the world and the subjective time of the self. We arrange for the telling of stories and anticipate the content that those stories communicate. In the first moment, as the first note sounds, we have already adopted as our own the basic style of separation and dichotomy, of subject and object, I and thou, self and others, me and you, fully convinced by this fundamental presentation, we conduct it forward. We take a set position, choose a focal setting, and frame our conduct accordingly. So that's a wonderful paragraph, I think, but I'm going to bring it back up or bring it back into connection with what Bruce wrote. You know, there is a kind of saturation of knowing within that, right? So what Bruce calls here the structuration. There's the subject-object and their arising. But the knowing that turns inward, that doesn't go anywhere, right? In that knowing, there's a sameness. Everything has the same flavor because the knowing is the same. And the timing is the same. You know, the timing has not made distinctions into past and present and future. So, again, another lovely word, the luminosity. Within that structuration, within the structures, the luminosity of the structuring, the structuration, the same taste. So this paragraph is a lovely paragraph, and as I was reading it just now, I was thinking it would be a great paragraph if you wanted to say to people, you know, what is time, what is the vision of time in the TSK vision, this paragraph would be a wonderful paragraph to summarize it all. But then I was thinking, excuse me, okay, that's also, yes. Yeah, well, I understand. I think you're right. My thought, and maybe the same thing is true for Pointless Points, is although this is a beautiful presentation, it requires a lot of background. You know, you can't just walk into an hour-long talk on TSK, let's say you were going to give such a talk, and read this and say, well, okay, any questions? You know, nobody will have a clue what you're talking about. There's a lot that's presupposed. And the same thing is true when you talk about Pointless Points, although that may give us easier access. It's a good, interesting question. Okay, there's a couple more, several more comments. Well, or at least, let's see. So Michael says, the hand that reaches out for a screwdriver is already available before intention comes into play. Knowing must be present in order to know. This is a nice example you're giving. We don't have to say, oh, I need a screwdriver. You see the situation and you reach for the tool that's necessary. I think that's what you're saying. Knowing must be present in order to know. Sitting still and wondering about my life in the world, it feels that the capacity to wonder is a given, from which, through which, all acts of concern, worry, or celebration are fueled. Yeah, so capacity is another very nice word. You know, we're so interested in what shows up. We don't so often think about the capacity, and it's not necessarily just our capacity, but the capacity that allows something to show up and allows the knowing to be there, which through which we can engage the world, picking up the right tool, responding in the right way to the situation. All of those possibilities seem to be there. And Eliana says, staying mindful and alert moves away from the self-centered view, or at least weakens self-concerns. I can be open to other alternatives and outcomes. Mm-hmm. That's right. And now you use phrasing here that a lot of people would find very accessible. I mean, people who aren't necessarily familiar with TSK, you say, if we're mindful and alert. And that's a valid description. But we are looking in a, you know, from a TSK perspective or looking for a new vision to say, well, what's involved in being mindful and alert when people say, you know, oh, during that meditation, let's say, because that's where those terms tend to come up, I was really mindful and alert. Well, perhaps what's going on is that they're more tuned in to this inward knowing, right? This knowing without going. And so the story that we've told and the contrast between that story, which is a story of conducting, and this alternative of knowing without going, that helps give us some insight into what's going on and with what we want to be able to explore. So just what you say, Eliana, being open to other alternatives and outcomes. Let me just mention one more little play on words, and then it's time to stop. The chapter, the language here in Dynamics, when it's talking about time, is talking about the conductor and the conducting, right? And so in English, it's a nice play on words because we conduct ourselves according to what's conducted, and that's our conduct. You know? And it sometimes happens in English that when you switch the stress on the syllable, you've got a whole different word, and yet it's really the same word, and it's very interesting to see. So when we're caught up in the conducting, then that determines our conduct, and our conduct does not allow for other alternatives and outcomes, to use the phrase that Eliana just used. Okay, well, there's plenty more we could say, but not this morning because we're done. Maybe I'll include some of it in the orientation. Okay, so thank you very much, everybody, and I will say something about a walkabout and practice and so on. I'll put that in the orientation too. So, thank you.